Well, we won't ridicule you as we talk with Dr. John Hall about electronic surveillance, his work, guinea pigs, technologies of control, and we'll be back with him and you next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. John Hall with us. John, why are we the guinea pigs?
Well, that's a question I get from a lot of victims. I get, why me? You know, why did they choose me? And the best answer I've got, and I've told this to a number of people, is why not? And, you know, you have to look at it from their perspective. They're doing research on this technology on how to further figure out what its boundaries are, you know, how far it can be taken to control the population. And they need a cross-sectional segment of the population to do that. And typically, if you look at the experimentation in the past done by the government, which, by the way, there's no rules against. There's no legislation against the government experimenting on the public, other than the common rule, and there's a lot of holes in it. But they need a cross-section of the population, which means somebody from just about every walk of life, and they typically use common folks that don't have the political or the financial clout to do anything about it. So in some cases it's whistleblowers, and most it's not. Most you were just probably picked at random. Now, there are some of these groups that have access to the technology that do hire it out. And I have seen a number of cases where it's a couple going through a divorce, and you know, the guy or the woman will hire it done to the other person to draw a mental illness diagnosis so they can get custody of the kids and they won't have to pay child support. And I've seen that a number of times.
It's been going on for a long time, as you mentioned in your book, with different facets, MK Search, MK Ultra as well. Who do you think concocted the whole scheme? I mean, who would sit back and say, let's test Americans? In some cases, let's drop biologicals on them and see, as they did in St. Louis, see what happens. Let's do this. Now we have this incredible technology. Let's bombard them. Let's see if we can make them do what we want. Let's see if we can make them go crazy. Let's just watch it and monitor it. Who would come up with that?
Well, the government comes up with that. They've been coming up with that for a long time. And I make that point in the book. The first few chapters of the book are about non-consensual experimentation in the past. And I get that question a lot. You know, people say, well, we just don't think the government would just wantonly experiment on people. First few chapters of the book, if you don't believe that the government would do that after reading that, then you're not going to believe anything, because a lot of that's been released through Freedom of Information. And it's not just MKUltra. It's like you said, it's, you know, floating radioactive iodide clouds over cities to see how many people get cancer, serratia in the water, testing on prisoners with radiation isotopes. Willowbrook School, they tested hepatitis vaccines on
mentally
ill children.
Have they no scruples?
It's been done for so long, and it's because there's no law against it. And after the Guatemalans found out that they had been experimented on by our CDC, if you remember several years back, Hillary Clinton was forced to offer apology to the Guatemalans for us experimenting on them. And they held a series of bioethics commissions meetings, and I was on your show after one of those meetings.
Yeah, I remember that.
And actually spoke at that meeting, and they had a whole board of apologists, ethicists on there that said, well, these are all post-World War II heinous experimentation. We have legislation against it now. And in reality, we don't. We have something called the Common Rule, and it actually states clearly in the Common Rule that if it's in the best interest of the experimentation, to notify the experimentees after the fact. And that's typically what this government does. 40 years goes by, somebody from the media exposes the experimentation, and then you get a lame excuse from somebody that's in, you know, political office at the time. And oftentimes after the original victims are long dead or aged.
How do you fight off being a victim of electronic harassment?
The advice I try to give to most victims is, for one, when you first notice that you're being stalked is the time you can do something about it. If you wait till you're actually being attacked with directed energy weapons and being controlled, that's a little bit harder. But most of the states have started some pretty good laws against stalking. The local police, most of them aren't part of the problem. Most of them are ignorant of the problem. And if you go to them with stalking complaints, they will pursue it. The other thing I tell a lot of these victims is stay in contact with some of the human rights organizations, ISAAC.org, Freedom from Covert Surveillance and Harassment, or get a hold of me or Dr. Robert Duncan or people that are involved in it, so you have somebody to vent to, so you don't make the pitfalls and the mistakes that most victims make, which is really trying to force your family members or force your loved ones into believing you, because the more you do that, the more they're going to think you're crazy. And it's almost always a loved one that gets you diagnosed. And thirdly, live normally. You know, don't shelter yourself inside, scared to go outside, thinking that everybody's part of it, because not everyone is part of it. It seems like that at first because it's such overwhelming technology. But you have to continue working. You have to continue forcing yourself to get out and interacting in public. When you isolate yourself, that also feeds into the mental diagnosis. So, you know, that's the other thing. Now, you know, there are some shielding techniques I go over in the book. There are some EEG alterations that you can do using binaural beat programs. This is EEG programming. It's EEG heterodyning and EEG cloning. And the only way to fight that is with programming, you know, to fight it. So, you know, there are some techniques I go through in the book where you can actually kind of reprogram yourself against it. But the main thing is just to try to live a normal life. And if you seclude yourself, you know, that just feeds more into the diagnosis that they're trying to make it look like you have. Most of these programs were headed up by psychiatrists in the original research. There's no mistake that this technology mimics schizophrenia. It was intended to do so.
All right, let's go get some calls here for you. We go to Wisconsin. Michelle, get us going on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This subject is something that has been perplexing me since 2006. April of 2006 is when this started with me. I can pinpoint the time, the day. You don't just develop schizophrenia like when you come down with the flu and you have a sore throat and 2 days later you have a fever and you're in bed. That's not how schizophrenia works, where one day you're sane and the next day you're bombarded with voices. And my question, what's the doctor's name again?
Dr. John Hall.
Dr. John Hall. My question to him is it a spiritual nature to many of the victims where they're trying to make you think that it's God doing this to you in the beginning, and then you end up in a spiritual fight, and eventually you, in the process when this first happens, with me it was all at once, and it was for 6 weeks straight, voices, visions. I didn't tell anybody. I could function by cleaning and cooking, but I wasn't interactive with my kids. I was quiet. I tried to hide it because, of course, you don't want that diagnosis. I did since then find a therapist that I confided this in, and she was very helpful in diagnosing me with post-traumatic stress disorder because of things that happened that I thought may have triggered this. But in the back of my mind, I always did think I was being bombarded with some kind of technology. And they're messing with me right now because what they're saying is, oh, they're just trying to get schizophrenics to call in so people can get a good laugh. I mean, this stuff still happens, but I'm much more.
Well, nobody's laughing here, Michelle.
And to your original question, that's a great question because a lot of times these are very well rehearsed dialogues that they communicate to these victims with. It's usually done in groups of people. Sometimes it's done conversationally between the people perpetrating it for the victim to hear. Oftentimes it's done directly, communication directly between the victim and the perpetrator. And one of the most common actual little skits that they like to do is to try to make someone think that it's God or Jesus or a spiritual being or an entity. And I've had a number of victims say, you know what, at first they were trying to tell me that I'd been chosen, or you know, that you know it was an alien spirit, or it was Jesus, or it was a prophet. And as a matter of fact, if you read in A New Breed, my first book, several of the girls that worked in the office I had at the time actually heard the voice of somebody claiming to be their spirit guide talking to them through their computer speakers. And they believed it because, you know, this person knew everything there was to know about them because they were getting data out of their computers until their spirit guide started to ask them to do sexual things, and then they realized that it was technological. So that is a very common skit that they'll play to make you think that you've been chosen. Or I had one lady call me and say, I really thought I had been anointed. And, you know, that's a common one, especially with people that they've surveilled long enough to know that it's a very religious person or a very spiritual person. That's a real common ploy to use.
All right, next up, let's go to San Antonio, Texas, your neck of the woods there, John. Carolyn's with us. Hi, Carolyn, go ahead.
Hello, John. George, hey. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I thank you and Dr. Hall may be an answer to prayer. My son is considering knee replacement, and we were just praying yesterday for an answer because he was hoping maybe they would be able to grow artificial knees in the near future. But it sounds like the stem cell thing is exactly what we're after. And I was wondering how I could contact Dr. Hall.
Actually, if you go to www.drjohnrhall.com, that's my medical website, and we can certainly get him evaluated, get some MRIs, and see if he's a candidate.
That's wonderful. God bless you, and thank you to both of you so much.
You're very welcome. How many other people are now beginning to beat the drums about this, John? I mean, it's starting. We've got a guest, Roger Tulsis. I don't know if you know Roger.
Roger's a great guy. I know Roger very well, and he's been in this fight for a long time. And I listen to your show on a very regular basis, so I actually hear Roger on quite a bit. And I don't know if you remember, I was actually good friends with Fred Bell.
Yes.
And Fred Bell had joined in on this fight there towards the end as well. It's gotten very common. I mean, when a new breed came out in 2008, there was hardly anything out about this problem. I mean, there were some blogs and people talking about it online, but nothing really published. After that came out, it kind of swung the door open for some other people and for some insiders to come out and start writing books about it. And now we have, I mean, there's human rights organizations online now that, I mean, I can't even begin to give you all of the names that are just dealing with the number of complaints that are being generated, not only in the United States, but globally.
Do you think they killed Fred Bell?
You know what? That's an interesting question, George, because, you know, Fred and I spoke almost every night on the phone. You know, obviously we're separated by a great distance, you know, where we live, but Fred and I had gotten to be very close friends, and we spoke and we emailed back and forth. And when they were getting ready to film that show, it was initially they had spoke to me, and the producers wanted me to set them up with people who are credible to talk to. And Fred was one of them, and Fred and several other people on that show agreed to do it if I did it. Well, then they didn't get the season approved until 2 years later. Then they were short on the budget, so they wound up not getting around to me, but they did interview Fred Bell and a couple of other people. Fred's exact words to me before he went on that, he said, you know what? I'm going to do it because it's the right thing, because this is going to alter humanity permanently if we don't do something about it or we don't fight it. And his exact words was, my handlers are not going to like this. And as you know, it was, 48 hours later, he was found dead in the hotel room after recording that show.
Yep, that's absolutely right. Absolutely. He had been on my show about 3 to 6 months, I think, before that. And he didn't sound like, I don't know, he just sounded like somebody who was looking over his shoulder.
No, Fred was convinced that he had handlers, and you know, Fred at one time had done a lot of electronics work for the DOD. He knew the technology very well and was part of some of the original, you know, studies using it. So I imagine he did have people looking, or at least he told me he had people looking over his shoulder. So certainly going to be missed. And, I mean, he was always entertaining on the show, that's for sure.
Okay, let's go to the rest of the phones before the break. Brad in Austin, Texas. Thanks for calling, Brad. You're on the air with us.
Holy cow. I've listened to you for so long, I can't believe I'm actually talking to you.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing this evening?
Good, Brad. Thank you.
Well, it's a revelation to finally hear something that rings true with me, because I've been being followed, and hearing these voices and thinking I was crazy, as I've been hearing the doctor, the good doctor, tell everyone else. They think it comes on as kind of like the form of schizophrenia, and that is not how it comes on. It comes on fairly abruptly, and at least it did with me. And I've had hell. I don't know if the other people that have had this experience have had the helicopters, but I've had helicopters following me for at least 8-9 years now. And at first, I thought it was just, you know, coincidental. And turns out that I had one experience that I'll share with you briefly. And I was walking down the street one day, and a green helicopter with no markings on it, but this very bizarre-looking camera was sticking out the front of it. And I'd seen, you know, I've seen all the helicopters and stuff before. I have a friend who's in aviation, and he likes to show me his pictures and stuff on the computer. And I know about the cameras and the infrared and the thermal imaging and the FLIR and all that kind of stuff. And so this is not what that was. And this helicopter came down. And as I was walking down the street, I walked into a donut shop, and I came out, and it was literally hovering over the donut shop, and it continued to follow me down the street. Mm-hmm. And I walked into a friend's apartment complex, and it comes down over the tree, you know, tops, and the prop wash from the helicopter actually blows. It came down so low, and this is like right off of a main street in Austin, Texas, Metric Boulevard, which is, you know, well-traveled. And this helicopter almost lands on the street. And these guys are all the occupants in the helicopter all staring right at me. And I can hear them think. I can hear what they're thinking. I can hear them all thinking he's going to, you know, run in this mailbox. He's trying to get away from us. And I ran into the place where all the people get their mail for the apartment complex. And it was covered by a metal roof, and it ended their conversation. So somehow the metal blocked it. And
like a Faraday cage.
What's that?
It was like a,
right, yeah. Right. And it somehow briefly protected me from it. And they were trying to get down to an angle where they could get sideways. And they literally brought the helicopter down next to this apartment complex to where they could, like, get a bead on me. And I could hear them again, you know. And the prop wash, I mean, they came down in traffic. There were cars blinking their lights. And I couldn't believe this was actually happening to me. I thought it was like a news crew. I thought something else was happening around me. I was like, how could I be so important? And then I remembered, oh, these voices all this time. And I've been seeking, you know, as a doctor, I'm sure you know the whole plethora of SSRIs and everything else, because of course I've isolated myself.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I live in a van right now because it's metal, you know, by choice, you know. And it's been, I was telling your screener. Yeah, it was a revelation, just absolutely revelation to hear this information.
Okay, hold on for a second, Brad. We're going to take this break, and I want to get just your reaction, John, when we come back after the break, just about, you know, how they pick these people again. I know you said it's random, but they seem to just keep at it and treat, you know, and they don't care if somebody seems like they're fighting or battling this or going over the edge. They just don't seem to care. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll take final calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with your final questions with Dr. John Hall. John, so Brad from Austin, Texas, I mean, he's living in a van to shelter himself, basically. I mean, he's getting bombarded by something, isn't he?
Yeah, and I see that quite a bit with a lot of victims, and yeah, and I've heard the helicopter story with quite a few victims. I never personally saw that until recently. We were doing some filming for a pilot for a series about targeted individuals, and one of the victims we were filming had complained about the black helicopters. You know, I've always heard these stories, but I'd never seen it. Actually, during the filming, there were two black helicopters following him while we filmed. So, yeah, that's happening. And, you know, I just, you know, don't know what to say. I mean, living in your van or being in metal will help shield some of it, but not all of it. You're still subjected to a lot of it, because some of this is scalar wave, And a lot of it is ELF, extremely low frequency wave, and not much shields that. So,
no, not much at all. And so what can an individual do? How do you fight this, really?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And you, before the break, you had asked, you know, that, you know, the government knows people are fighting this. How do they take that, and do they just not care? One thing I can tell you is they do care about the educational efforts. You know, they don't seem to be too worried about the research on shielding and stuff like that, because I know they pretty well know that that's ineffective. As a matter of fact, the DOD has had abstracts out for the private sector to find ways to shield ELF and electromagnetic weapons for some time. They've invented these weapons without even knowing how to shield themselves from them. But they are kind of fighting the educational efforts. And myself and Dr. Robert Duncan, who has a couple of great books out about this too, have both been harassed by the FBI just for printing our books. So, you know, I know for a fact that they really don't want educational material out there for the public, because it's going to subvert their experimentation. So, I mean, they are somewhat irritated about that.
Okay, back to the phones we go. We go to Willow in Arkansas. Welcome to the program, Willow. You're up.
Hello.
Hi,
George. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Hello, Dr. Hall.
Hello.
I guess I'm kind of calling to be a little bit of a whistleblower in my town, because I am really sick of this, and I'm so happy to hear you on the show tonight, Dr. Hall. I've missed you on a couple of the other shows. I wasn't able
to. Thank you.
I heard afterwards. I did try calling down when I first, through a website, had read some of your writing of what was going on, but I couldn't get through to you, so I'm glad to speak to you tonight. Anyway, what's going on here is there's a whole lot of stuff going here in my little town. I'm a targeted individual. It's all my neighbors. And the funny part about it is I recognize all their voices every time that they try and do their
What city are you in, Willow? Can you tell us that?
I am north of Russellville in Arkansas.
Okay. So what's happening
actually,
to you?
Actually, I'm in Hector. I don't really care. I don't like these people for what they are doing. And they're all my neighbors, and they like to psyops me. They've used their invisibility. They've walked through my house. I see how they do that. Yes, they do come into my house when I'm gone. Yes, they have me isolated. Yes, 3 years ago, they went and they lied to my youngest daughter, telling her about how crazy I was. Because I'm not from Arkansas originally, but I've been here for over 25 years.
Now, when you say they, who are they?
They're my neighbors. They're the Masons, they're the KKK, they're the Illuminati, you name it, they're the CIA, and everything else.
But they live right next to you? They're in
I'm
the
in a
community?
Rural area, in my own little private house.
Yeah. All right, let me check in with you here on John. It is unusual that they would live there, too, isn't it?
Well, what I've seen in a number of cases is they sometimes will rent homes around a target and plant people there. And I've also seen cases, you know, and they tried doing that with the girl that I initially wrote about in A New Breed here. They actually went to her neighbors and told them that they were FBI and that, you know, they were watching this girl and that they could they use the patio to stage from.
And they have badges, right?
And they had fake badges and stuff that the real FBI just doesn't do. You know, trust me, when the real FBI wants to talk to you, they come to your house and they talk to you, or you get a phone call and you get, you know, told to come in and talk to them.
Yeah.
They don't come to your neighbors and ask for help. But, you know, these PIs that are subcontractors or independent contractors that are using the technology, they will do that. And you'd be surprised how many people in the public will actually accept that excuse and actually offer aid, you know, to help surveil someone that they've been told is a pedophile or a drug dealer or a terrorist. It works quite often. I mean, if more people would say, you know what, show me some legitimate ID, let me make a call to the FBI and see if you're really that person. But most people won't.
Next up, First time caller, Jim in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Jim. Thanks.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Hall. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I had an experience about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's only happened once to me, but it was a wake-up call and really hits home with what you're talking about tonight. I was in Las Vegas walking back from the Venetian to the Paris, and you know, Las Vegas Boulevard in the evening is a maze of people. And I was trying to make my way with my girlfriend, and we were trying to get back to our room and or back to the blackjack tables. And I was walking along, and I wanted to kind of take a detour and get off the sidewalk, and I was going to cross the lane of people coming the opposite way. And as soon as I did that, I get this this focused shout in my ear yelling, "Don't touch me." And I thought, my God, somebody yelled in my ear. And I mean, it was so loud, I doubled over. And I looked at my girlfriend, and I looked behind me to see if somebody was looking back at me. And the people walking by me didn't look at me. My girlfriend said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Did you hear that guy shout in my ear?" And she said, "No." But we got back to the Paris, and my ear was just burning up, and it was hurt so badly that I took the small end of a spoon and just kept it in a nice glass of ice water and just kind of held it to my ear. And it just bothered me all night, and I couldn't figure it out. And this has been about 5 or 6 years ago. And then I looked up on the internet about LRAD technology and how they can pinpoint voices and go right into your head. And I was wondering if that was it, or the devices on the computer were so large that I wouldn't think that they would be able to maneuver one around unless it was on a ship or something. But I guess they have them that are a smaller capacity now.
Well, 5 years ago, they had LRADs then, but you're right, they're on a Hummer. It probably wouldn't have been that. Now, there is another device that is handheld that can do that, called an audio spotlight. And that's done with I think the smallest one is a 14-inch by 14-inch antenna that they can direct to you to do that. And it actually works better on a busy street or a place with plenty of ambient sound than it does in a very silent room. Or you could have been possibly near someone who was the target and had a misdirected communication at you. Because especially when they're first using this technology, there's a lot of trial and error with it. And a lot of these victims will, you know, have loud booming sound come through the house where it probably would be audible to other people around them. Until it gets fine-tuned down to where just they hear it. So, I mean, you may have just been in the right place at the wrong time, or it possibly could have been audio spotlighting.
Next up, we go to North Carolina. Simi's with us. Hi, Simi, go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it. And thank you to you and Dr. Hall for having this show.
Sure.
I was targeted, and I'll tell you, I often use different names and nicknames because of what I went through on the internet and in my own home. I do match your description of being middle-aged and a woman and living alone and educated. So, but I'm also a very well-known activist, and I've been targeted for my activism before. But what happened, I want to say several years ago, and you may both remember this, is when the WikiLeaks came out, the CIA created the WikiLeaks Task Force, and they became very active on the internet, targeting any activist that was supporting or repinning or information, anything to do with WikiLeaks or reading any of the documents. So that's where I started noticing things happening to me, and it was really horrible. I thought I was really going crazy, and the people that were doing this online were started doing it offline also, and I just felt like I couldn't sleep. Anytime I just would try to even be quiet, I just kept hearing them, and I just kept telling myself, this is really crazy. Who are these people? Why are they doing this? And finally, a friend, another activist friend, reminded me. They said, hey, you're very well known. It's very hard to discredit you. They have to hit you really hard. Remember that. That's what's really going on here. And I was so glad he said that, because that was the truth. I mean, if I gave you my real name, you would see so much on the Internet about what I've done in my organization. So what also happened during this time was, and you may know about the journalist Barrett Brown. And Barrett Brown was one of the first people, way before Snowden or anybody, of writing about how the government and contractors were targeting Americans and activists using all of this technology. Do you recall that? And
yep.
How they went after Barrett Brown, and he's in jail now. They gave him another 5 years.
And that's actually the reason that's happening is we've contracted out a lot of the intelligence work, and I bring that up in the book, too, that it's bad enough that the government doesn't have very good safeguards on intelligence gathering, but when you put clearances in the hands of regular civilians, then you have people walking around with access to technology that they probably shouldn't have, with really no oversight. That may be part of the reason for the proliferation of harassment that we're seeing now. And as far as the being an activist, I know several years ago, I had a flurry of calls from the 9/11 truther people that were being decimated with electronic harassment.
Oh, and I bet they were, too, in a big, big way, huh?
Yep.
So we've talked about little implants. Well, let's talk about microchipping. They want to chip children in school to keep track of them. They want to try to get us all chipped. Is it going to happen, or are we going to resist, John?
You know what? I think there's been enough resistance already that part of the reason that they've really researched ways to do this without chipping is because the bottom line is this country still, for the most part, has Judeo-Christian values, and most of us aren't going to take a chip voluntarily. And it took them a while to figure that out, but once they did, I think they realized that they better start looking for other ways to control people. You know, have we found chips in a handful of people? Yeah, we have. But that's been after looking at thousands and thousands of MRIs and X-rays. That seems to be the rarity and not the rule. Most of this is being done, at least from what we can gather with the available medical imaging, is that it's being done without a chip. I think the government finally came to the decision that most people weren't going to voluntarily take an implant.
No, not at all.
Now, they have been working on some other RFIDs that are painted on or tattooed on, and, you know, that you would never know you have on you. But the chipping, other than, you know, people volunteering for it, for medical information, I think is what they're kind of going to. Although, I mean, I have pulled chips out of people, and there was one very fairly famous inventor that was taken out to lunch by an NSA operative, and we did find a Verichip buried in his arm after he had been drugged over lunch. So, but that's the rarity. Not
drugged over lunch, and they got him.
Yeah, he actually had worked on an invention to harness free energy to charge batteries.
That's why they got him,
yeah.
Let's go to Donald, truck driving in Florida. Hi, Donald. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. Hello, Mr. Hall. It's a pleasure talking to both of you.
Likewise.
You did answer one of the questions that I was going to ask, and I will just ask the other question, and then I'll take myself off the air. I was wondering if you had ever heard of a program in California called CLERP, C-L-E-R-P, Clandestine Laboratory Experimental Research Program. It's actually written onto the law books, or in the law in California. It's hidden in the health and safety codes. And the only way that you can find it is to actually go into the law library in Sacramento online. I don't remember the exact specific number for the law. It was a 11-800 or a 12-800-01, 02, and 03C. My wife had found it. through a friend of hers who was a hacker. And he said it wasn't hard to find, that general public could find it on the books in the law library in California. Basically, the law gives the right to state, working alongside federal officials, including Department of Defense and military also, the right to follow anyone at any time in the state of California who has been known to use or known to associate with or has been convicted or is under investigation for any type of drug offenses. It's basically a vague law giving them full right to follow whoever they want at any time using any measures. And it does involve a lot of this technology that you're talking about. And the problem is that they don't have to report who they're following or even how much money it's costing to follow that particular person.
I want to check into that. John, we're almost out of time, my friend, but I want to thank you for being on the program. And, whoa, it's kind of scary, John.
Yeah, it is scary. And California is one of the hardest hit states, and most of the complaints are coming out of California.
Let's keep in touch. I have a feeling this could get a little worse before it gets better, huh?
I think so, and I appreciate you having me on, George.
Okay. Dr. John Hall, his book, Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, the main one, newbreedmovie.com. Real life, it's scarier than the movies, isn't it? For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.